You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast, bringing you the best of geek from week to week. Join your hosts, Dion and Quinny, and the occasional special guest as they talk movies, TV, gaming, toys, comics, and everything in between.
Great to meet you.
One, two, bam!
Good, you really brought it.
Thank you.
You hang in there, you got a lot of ability.
Have you ever seen a one-trick pony and feel so happy and free?
I was wondering if I could get some more work.
All I got is weekends. Isn't that when you sit on other dudes' faces?
Have you ever seen a one-legged dog?
Have a beer with me? One beer.
Can you have a daughter?
Oh, my daughter, she don't like me very much.
You should call her.
And you seen me?
What do you want from me?
I'm an old broken down piece of meat, and I deserve to be all alone. I just don't want you to hate me.
And you seen me, but I
two words.
Three. Match.
Bring it. You know, with a little luck, this could be my ticket back on top.
Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything?
80s, man, best ever.
Guns N' Roses.
Crew.
Yeah, then that Cobain had to come around and ruin it all.
90s sucked.
90s sucked.
These things that have comforted me, I drive away. My only faith's in the broken bones and bruises I display.
You know, the only place I get hurt is out there.
I'm really here.
This life, you lose everything you love, everything that loves you. A lot of people told me that I'd never wrestle again. The only one who's going to tell me when I'm through doing my thing is you people here.
Welcome to the first episode of WrestleTober. That's right,
WrestleTober!
Hello. Dion, can you please start the whole thing again, but just start it with his own, well, brother, we're good to have you back here for another year, brother.
Absolutely not. I'm not touching that one with someone else's barge pole. I don't want to talk about that kind of wrestling. I want to talk about the emotional wrestling that we're all going to have in this WrestleTober month. That's right. It's a cerebral wrestling match that we're going for all of WrestleTober. Last year was Spooktober, and this is WrestleTober. Mm. Yes, it's wrestling month, all month, forever.
What? And pray tell, why?
Hey?
Well, that would be because... this weekend is the Perth takeover of WWE. We have SmackDown on Friday night.
And
we have the Crown Jewel tournament on Saturday, followed up by Monday Night Raw. And it's all live.
Sorry, but they all sound weirdly like sex acts.
Yeah.
Like the Crown Jewels and then Raw on Monday night. I was like,
it's all laced with homoerotic undertones.
Yeah. That's why you're going. That's why you're there.
Live from the most remote capital city on the planet, it's Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
And Tuesday Night Sheathed. sorry, that's very lowbrow. Peter,
you get
I'm
to
sorry.
Wednesday Night Anal, it's a bad time.
Lot of good money to TKO to get them to come and do this for 3 years in a row. So
yeah,
3 years in a row they've been doing.
Yeah, so this is the second year. Next year will be their third year out of the contract.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, this is all very interesting, but what is it? What is it about?
What's what about?
What is the WWE and your stuff about? What is that about? Is about what sport is it, Jill? What sport is it?
Wrestling.
Exactly.
Where were you at the of the show?
But today we're going to talk about one specific wrestler.
Yeah, the wrestler.
The wrestler. The only one.
The definite article.
The first one. Were a wrestler. We're talking about...
not at all what this movie is about.
But. No. Darren Aronofsky's 2008 film, The Wrestler. Mm-hmm. Which is what we do today, which is the film that came after Darren Aronofsky's previous film, which was... The Fountain that everyone hated. The Fountain. Remember The Fountain? Nope.
Yes, I do remember The Fountain, but
Hugh Jackman in The Fountain.
The Fountain.
The Fountain. The people were like,
never heard of it.
The Fountain.
I mean, I vaguely remember it. I think I've erased most of it from my memory.
Jesus. Okay, I say do it.
Requiem, I've erased mostly from my memory out of necessity, not because it was bad.
I think it
was also kind of bad.
I quite enjoyed The Fountain. I don't care what people were going to say, but it had Hugh Jackman in it. So, come on, man. And then no one really liked it, and then he came out
Jackman
with this
one. Jackman was also in Van Helsing.
Never done a terrible movie.
Exactly. I was like, Hugh Jackman, as much as we may love him, is not the litmus test for good.
You sons of bitches. He's an Australian icon.
What was the musical show that he did one episode of TV and it got cancelled? Like
Friends?
No, hang on. I'll find it. But
this isn't a Hugh Jackman podcast.
We're getting
into
a huge tangent right now.
Yeah, we are.
Let's roll back into this one. We're talking about The Wrestler. Right. So, this one is the 2008 version. It is starring Mickey Rourke. It's got Marissa Tomei. It's got
Marissa Tomei's tits.
It's
my word.
And ass, tits and ass. At the time, in the Hollywood geriatric age of 44. I know, like, it's strange. It also got Evan Rachel Wood in it for a minute. And also a bunch of real wrestlers, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
A long list of real wrestlers.
Yeah, a lot of independent people and really handycam and great. And, I mean, after this, he did Black Swan. So, an interesting time.
I'm just interested to know what are people's thoughts on Black Swan?
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, no, that's okay.
I mean, I thought it was a weird continuation of the Padme story from episode one. But I went with it,
So, interestingly, it ties into recent stuff that we've talked about. Black Swan is very, very obviously heavily influenced by Perfect Blue.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So to the point where there's scenes ripped almost like
shot
out of it. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about these two films is that originally The Wrestler and Black Swan were the one film. So initially,
what?
Yes.
What?
I know, right?
They couldn't call it The Black Wrestler. I see why they separated them.
Originally in the screenplay, quite early on, he wanted to tell a story that was mirroring two people going through their own descent into, like, essentially breaking shit down. So Aronofsky's done a pretty good line in a lot of that stuff before. Requiem for a Dream is about, pretty much all the characters in it going to their lowest fucking point. He wanted to do something similar, but was, comparing and contrasting, if you will. The idea of the wrestler who is going to the end of his career and the ballet dancer who is coming to the end of her mental rope. So
interesting.
And partway through writing, I think you just went, hang on, no, there's actually two films here. I probably don't need to.
And one of them cost him fuck all, and the other one cost him too much. So
yes,
we can see. But today we're talking about The Wrestler, aren't we?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a synopsis for us?
I do, and I'm not entirely sure. Like, do we do this as the ring announcer, or?
Oh, you want a shit accent?
Yeah, I don't have to. I'm perfectly happy to leave the shit accent behind.
Terrible supermarket manager.
Wow.
And I love this because Quinny was kind of excited about doing the wrestling announcer, and now he's got to do the terrible supermarket. Yeah.
Well, are you going to do four wrestling announcers in a row this month?
Save it up for the good one that we've got. end of the month, you can do wrestling announcer for Nacho Libre, okay? But for the rest of them.
Surely with Nacho Libre, I have to do shit Mexican announcer.
No, you do not.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Fine.
Don't cross the streams there, Quinny. Just,
fine.
It's your lane. What are you going to do?
I'm doing shit fucking...
No, fuck that. Announcer. You can still have announcer, but it is strip club announcer.
specific.
Ladies and gentlemen,
why do please, I work with you?
Please welcome to the stage, Mickey Rourke. Sorry, I'm just
okay.
I wrote you there. Oh dear.
Good evening, aging wrestler Randy the Ram Robertson. Please welcome to the stage, Mickey Rourke. Is long past his prime, but is still ready and raring to go on the pro wrestling circuit. After a particularly brutal beating, however, Randy hangs up his tights, and you'll see him take them off, pursues a serious relationship with a long-in-the-tooth stripper. Now, we don't call them that. We just call them long-term earners. And tries to reconnect with his estranged daughter. But he can't resist the lure of your ring and the ring and readies himself for a comeback. Welcome to the stage, the Randy Ram.
Excellent.
Yes.
Sorry. I mean, it's not one that I thought you'd have in the chamber, but there you go.
It's there. It's ready to go. I'm just imagining myself behind shit sequins.
In a tiny
with my
booth.
Own little slider and a shit microphone going, please, welcome to the stage.
Yeah. Candy, you're on. Oh, dear. Well done, Quinny.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now that one's behind you.
Yes, thank you.
Never need to be honest.
It's behind all of us.
Now,
hang on. Karina's like shit accent, not shit racist accent.
We're talking about the Nacho Libre Mexican.
Okay, right.
I think that's where that one was from. You just missed it.
I don't think there was particularly much racism in there, but anyway.
Can I please take a quick litmus test? Who had seen the wrestler before we had to review the wrestler?
I had.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
No, I hadn't.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
I'm so sorry, you guys. You must have had a shitty week.
I mean, I watched two of the four films and, yeah, a little bit. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Wait, you guys didn't like this movie?
No, it's not that I didn't like it.
It's depressing
as
fuck.
It's uplifting.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was like, oh, wait, wow.
Like, if you want to crawl around and play in the mud in the gutter that you found yourself in, sure, this is a great film for you.
I like those kind of, like, tormentuous slice of life movies of like people in backwater towns having a real shit time of it because it makes me feel better.
That's the whole at least I'm not that guy.
Yeah. I think there's something really beautiful in like following somebody's story that might not necessarily be like a sparkling life.
Sure.
But right. But also was sparkling life at one point.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, the polish has come off a little bit.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it's something, do you want to watch The Fall from Grace or do you want to watch what's going on at the end of it? And this is, I found it a very, like, even at the time I watched it the first time, and now revisiting it years later, is like, this is a really powerful story about just regular kind of life. It was a really great way to just follow people along and see how people are just living. They're just doing what is considered regular stuff and how that affects them. And, you know, I love a story where it's not like, oh, look, someone with a house and all of these things that we can't afford
anymore. Yeah, it doesn't need to be a hero story the whole time.
Yeah.
Like,
you know.
And I think it does a really interesting thing of giving a character or attempting to give a character either some kind of redemption or some kind of redemptive arc, but then also pointing out all of the fallibilities and the foibles and the failures all the way through. And it's, yeah, I found it not an easy watch, but at the same time, I remembered that when I watched it back in 2008 or whenever it was, like, there was a reason it was nominated for all the awards it was. Like, it was, you know, it's a good film. It still is a good film.
Yeah, like, it's visually stunning. Yes, it is depressing. But, I think there's something really special about the story. When you think about it, people make a career choice and maybe it's not always the easiest one, but it's something that this guy's obviously really passionate about and like is living his life to his fullest trying to pursue that career.
Mm. And Pete, how did you go coming into this blind?
Well, I mean, I never watched it because I don't have any interest in the subject matter.
No, it's fine. Like, I mean, think that it's like a sport movie. It's like, this is a sport movie. It's like, well, I don't really want to see that already. It's just that I find it more of a character study, but sure.
Oh, yeah. So 100% is an amazing character study. And possibly if I'd known that when it first came out, I probably would have watched it and nerded out about it because at that time I had a lot more energy for nerding out about good filmmaking. And I do these days where I'm kind of like, I've got to watch this artful film and all I want to do is like watch a shitty rom-com and switch my brain off.
I have to be made to feel something, but, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, like Jesus, what a drag. But it we did, I guess it wasn't really living in my film because I kind of ignored it at the time, despite all of the awards it was being nominated for, because I really, for me, wrestling is not any kind of fighting, you know, boxing. Like, I know that wrestling is more theatre than anything else, but it's not theatre that I enjoy because very much like body horror, that kind of, like, raw violence has always made me uncomfortable. So I've always avoided subject matter. The most I know about wrestling, I know because I watched Glow. And I think with Glow, because it was a different into the story and because it, that kind of depiction of violence was a little different, I was kind of able to cope with it. Yeah. But I think there's like an element in you know, the two films I watched this week that we're going to be talking about of that kind of idea of like people pushing their bodies to a limit for entertainment and for, you know, a kind of athletic theatre in a way that doesn't kind of gel well with my brain. So even though it was super critically acclaimed at the time, I kind of really avoided it. So here I am, having watched it, pretending to be, you know, my film nerd self in 2008 when it came out. And I totally would have gone nuts for this film from a filmmaking cinema nerd perspective at the time. There's a lot to nerd out about.
Yeah.
You know, storytelling wise, techniques wise, you know, camera movements, jump cuts, you know, the way that the film brings you into a world in a way that kind of feels authentic because of those things, because the filmmaking is deliberately feels unpolished. I mean, it's cool. It's a cool movie.
Yeah.
Fucking depressing though.
super depressing.
This is the kind of...
It is interesting. Oh, you go, D.
I was going to say, this is the kind of wonderful thing about The Wrestler, which is you're going in with an expectation of it being something and then you find out that it's actually not a film about wrestling. It's a film about your own, like a personal struggle or a personal journey and decisions made through that along the way. And also it's a story about someone who didn't do great things. Like could have done great things, but didn't do great things and is fallible and makes bad choices. So it allows you to connect with that character really, really well. Because it's kind of like this person is all of us, you know. Maybe we'll get to that. We're not quite sure.
I'm hoping I don't have a heart attack. And...
Well, it's not really about that. It's just a means to an end. You know, he had a heart attack. I mean, sorry, spoilers.
Don't do hardcore matches every week and you won't have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Like, I will point out, Peter, to you that, like, the amount of hardcore matches that this guy did in this film is, like, exponentially, like, not the ratio of usual hardcore matches that someone would do. Right. And a hardcore match is, like, where I mean, like, going through glass tables and having weapons, like, used on you. That's not...
Staple guns.
That's not standard That's just run of the mill wrestling. That is what we call a hardcore match, and they don't happen as frequently as they do in this film because they are very dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting to watch because, like, not knowing too much about wrestling and specifically the amateur side, like the independent side, like the stuff that's held in a gym, you know, the meet and greets that are just in a community hall.
Oh man, I want to come back.
That was I know. So that was my first introduction to actual wrestling in Australia. Really? Was an independent held in a community rec hall wrestling match,
like a local kind of.
It was the Riot City Wrestling Crew in Adelaide. The home wrestling franchise of now WWE world-renowned Rhea Ripley. I saw her final match at Riot City Wrestling before she got drafted to WWE. So I'm like, hold that in very high regard. And there's actually like quite a number of people that have come out of Riot City that are now in the States, circuits, not necessarily WWE, but like adjacent ones like AEW and TNA and stuff like that.
And it's so interesting.
I've got to say, it is pretty accurate.
Yeah, I mean, it's like all semi-professional or independent sports in general. You only ever really get to see, like, general people who don't have that much of an interest. You only get to see the big spectacle, the big games, the big show, as they call it. But there is just community groups. There are people out there doing this stuff, and it is punishing. It never gets any easier. And I really felt that that drove that home. It made me get a better understanding of the drive, why people are doing stuff.
And in the chat, Dino mentioned that, like, a lot of, we've seen wrestling. Some of my first experiences of wrestling were watching it at Supernovas.
Yeah.
You know, where they'd have the local wrestling group from, you know, which is either east coast of Australia or the local town, you know, setting up and doing their thing. And if there was a wrestler there as a guest, they might get involved with it or whatever. But like that sequence in the hall where they're going and just signing, you know, VHS tapes and stuff like that, there was a lot of time that I looked around at the conventions that I worked at and went, oh, that. And I remember watching this in 2008 because we'd just been, you know, only just started doing work in conventions and went, oh, that's what that is. Like there's a history and a thing in there. But I just wanted to go back, Pete, what you were saying about the way it shot, which I found so interesting because it is deliberately shitty. And I remember watching it the first time and thinking, God, this is a crappy looking film. And then
technique all the way.
I know. And that's what I realized this time as somebody who's older and knows, you know, that director has made those choices and how specifically accurate and technique driven this is to look that handheld, to look that poorly lit, to look that video. It's just fucking incredible technique stuff.
It's a perfect way to explore the film because you're watching this handheld, but everything's in frame, everything's focused right, you're capturing all the right moments because it's the second kind of explainer to the story, which is here's someone who's just out of reach.
Yeah,
to
it's the good the kind glory. Of gritty, not the, not the shitty kind of gritty that we. Yeah.
And there's a lot of visual motifs built into it as well, via that particular technique. So you know, every time you're kind of following him down a shitty hallway in that kind of over the shoulder kind of follow cam, it feels like you're following him through the crowd into the ring. It feels like that kind of camera work, and it happens multiple times throughout the film until one moment in the film where he actually like leans into it further and has the audio of the crowd and you know, that moment where, you know, he'd actually be pushing into the ring and it's something completely different. So there is that kind of like, yeah, okay, well done.
Yeah. Fine. I'll have to acknowledge that good work was done there. Yeah, I mean, I really like how everything focused on the fact that it was following the story in the way and try everything around the character of Randy, the Ram, was helping to push along that story of this man who has almost was there at one point and then has always looking for that support in everything he does for the rest of his life. And it's a failing that he's always chasing it. And he knows that he has that failure, but he still continues on anyway. It's really interesting. I loved it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a question of failure, but it's also that thing of, in some ways, not acknowledging failure. Like, you know, he's aware of how bad his situation has got, but...
Yeah, he's kind of in denial about it, though.
Yeah, 100%. And that's, I think, what, to me, made the film super heartbreaking in a way,
mm-hmm.
is that it is all about somebody having that element of hope and getting closer to redemption through various different means. Like, there's different things coming at him that could potentially lead to redemption as he sees it. Mm-hmm. You know, is it the love of Marissa Tomei's character? Is it a relationship with his daughter? Is it this match that's going to bring him back into the public eye? I mean, are any of those going to do it?
At one stage, even working at the deli counter felt like it was going to be, like, there was this, like, super sweet scene, you know, where he kind of, like, leans into potentially the joy of finding that he had a talent for customer service, which was, it was like a super sweet scene. And then they just kind of, like, peel it all away from you.
It really is, isn't it?
Quite literally. Kind of.
I mean, to be a wrestler, you have to be able to connect with your audience, because you either get heat, which is you get booed, or you get a pop, which is like a cheer. So, I mean, for him, like, connecting to people on that kind of level, I think he's used to. So finding that he could like put that into his work at the deli counter, I think was like, and that's kind of like a nice thing for him.
That chasing of the heat and the pop kind of stuff is also sprinkled throughout the rest of the film and just his everyday interactions. Like when he's with the kids in the trailer park, you know, he's looking for friendship. He's looking for connection in everything he does. And he knew that he had it, and he lost it because he made bad decisions, obviously, but he knew that it was still in there. And that's why it's such a, like, I found that the character is such one that you have so much sympathy for right throughout the film. Yeah, sure. He still makes bad decisions, but you know that he's trying.
Yeah, he's kind of living in this weird delusional hopefulness of his life taking off any minute, any day.
And the American delusion.
Yeah. Hey, buddy. Not the American dream anymore. It's the American delusion.
I got to admit, there are moments in there where I was like, fuck, I was feeling this right to my heart as somebody who, you know, as a younger person thought, yeah, I'm going to pursue acting and you know, you realize that things, as you get older, things change, you know, and I'm not saying that I'm not, you know, can continue doing those things, but you see, like, you get older, you know,
yeah.
You hurt things suddenly aren't as easy. And like, so watching a thing like this, you really can kind of come to a bit of a, that's a lot. Yeah.
And knowing Mickey Rourke had done, like, another really good turn a couple of years beforehand in Sin City, where he played Marv, which was great, even though he's heavily made up, you can't really remember him. And then he went after that, like, all these accolades for doing The Wrestler. It's like, oh, it's fantastic. It's a resurgence. And he went and did Iron Man 2.
I want my blood. I mean, that was blonde. The best line out of that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of like, it kind of feels like this was art mirroring life for Mickey at a certain point.
Speaking of which, did you hear anything about how they marketed this?
No, fill us in.
Okay, when we posted up the tile to say we were going to do it, somebody sent a message saying, oh, you need to check out what happened when WWE started getting involved in the promotion of this film.
Oh, my God, please tell me.
I mean, how fucked up is that, that just because it's called The Wrestler, they've gone, okay, we're going to help promote this. And I'm like, this is not the film.
No, because it meant, like, more eyes on them. Like, I completely understand the juggernaut of WWE and how unabashed they are, I'll say.
Yeah. So basically, in the lead up to this, there was talk about bringing in Mickey Rourke to do wrestling, and whether or not they were trying to build him up as the character of Randy the Ram or not. I think it was kind of, it was like, we know that this is probably not going to work. So then they started doing a feud between Chris Jericho and Mickey Rourke.
Okay.
And Mickey Rourke ended up going to WrestleMania and being called out on stage by Chris Jericho.
Oh, wow.
And I believe that he actually got into the ring. Now, I don't know. The video I watched didn't have any actual wrestling in it, just them yelling at each other.
Okay. And they cut a promo.
Yeah, they cut a sick promo. But, yeah, like, to me, there's something that's just fundamentally slightly twisted about that.
Now they've gotten much better at it. They just put Jake Gyllenhaal in there and said that he was an MMA fighter, like in the Roadhouse. So, you know, they've vertically integrated everything now. It's not weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They still do it to this day, Quinny. If someone's got something to promote and they like wrestling, they're still doing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
they've always done it. Yeah, I mean, like the other month, fucking Jelly Roll was wrestling. And the month before that, Travis Scott was wrestling. Like,
okay, for a second there, I thought Jelly Roll, Jelly Roll was an actual, like, cake.
Oh, God.
Mm.
And a couple of years ago, Bad Bunny was in fucking WWE for, like, a hot minute.
Is that some sort of evil bug?
Really?
Oh, fucking... Go back to sleep, Grandpa.
Sorry, I found the video. I will put a link to it, and it will definitely be in our show notes. But, yes, Mickey Rourke definitely gets in the ring and, by the looks of it, knocks Chris Jericho the fuck out.
That's my that is my question to people who might know better, Jill. what was going on in the wrestling world, the real wrestling world, during this time? Like, how was it received?
2008, funnily enough, was the PG era. So before that, we were in the Attitude Era. That was when, like, The Rock and Triple H and HBK were, like, the popular guys, and it was all about being very derogative towards women. All the women wrestlers look like prostitutes, sorry, sex workers. And it was all very, like, MTV kind of, like, poor taste, very questionable ethics. Yeah, it was not a fun time, and I was definitely not into wrestling then.
Yeah.
But the 90s and, like, the early 2000s were, like, a tumultuous time on television. A lot of kids were watching stuff that was probably a bit too adult, so they had to kind of, like, wind back all of this programming and stuff, and so they were like, okay, well, you're gonna get a PG rating, so you need to cut the crap. And that was when they kind of polished up their act. But I recommend additional watching to check out the documentary Mr. McMahon on Netflix, because that explains, like, the Attitude Era and how Vince McMahon was, like, kind of involved, of which he's not anymore. But I mean, it's still kind of reflective of the wrestler, in that we do have some, you know, old washed up names coming back trying to reignite their careers. One wrestler who was named in all of the the McMahon indictments is a guy called Brock Lesnar. Oh, yes. And he's been accused of proliferating sexual content from women that he worked with, aided by Vince McMahon. And unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, he wrestled John Cena on television. And we're all like, why is this guy back?
Ew.
So, yeah, a bit ew. So they're still making some questionable choices. It's not, you know, perfect, but it's better than it was.
To be completely honest, America is just all around making some questionable choices. Let's be honest. We can't really just focus on the one.
Yeah.
As a group, very depressing.
Yeah. I always find it interesting, though, because the, like, and we will talk about it throughout the rest of the month, but there is always this conflict between real and fake and what people know is real and what people know is fake. And
well,
the
I'll
business
give you another extracurricular watch. Check out Unreal on Netflix that actually shows you the behind the scenes of how they make WWE.
Yeah. It's all real fake. That makes sense.
It's okay. It's predetermined, so they're writing storylines, and it will get acted out. But like the wrestlers choreograph their matches, and everything is performed. But they are still, you know, quite athletic and acrobatic in what they do. They might be like pulling the punches, but you know,
it's real stunts by real people.
Exactly.
Like, you know,
that was one of my favorite scenes in the film, actually, was where in one of the early wrestling things, they're talking through the night.
Yeah.
And they're stepping through what each of the matches is going to be. Each of the pair ups is sort of talking through it. Oh, we're going to do this. I'm going to work the leg. Oh, no, we're working the leg.
Yes.
I'll do the neck then. We'll do something like that.
And that's exactly how those kind of shows are run. And, like, you will see, like, during a match on the fly, maybe something will happen. Like, if they have you, like, pulled up close, you might just see some mouths moving and they're, like, conveying, I'm going to do this next or whatever. So, you know, it's all happening as it plays out.
And also, you got to sell it.
Mm.
It's nothing without the theatre.
Yeah, as Predaking says, that the match with the Ayatollah at the end is really interesting because you can see them choreographing as they go. They've obviously worked together for a long time, but also you can see him trying to help his friend, you know, to say, okay, I'm going to give you the easy shot here. You don't have to do something hard. I'll give you the win, you know, just go with it, that kind of thing, which, it's fascinating. In so many ways, it's like a dance where there's a lead and a follow and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the communication all the way through it. And I found it beautiful in a weird way.
Yeah. Speaking of dancing, Marissa Tomei. Absolutely. Absolutely wonderful in this as well. Like talking about career comebacks. Although I'm putting inverted commas because it's just like, she never really went anywhere. And
she never went away.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's just like, oh, you know, Marissa Tomei, she's amazing in this. And everyone's like, wait, what? And as I said in the intro part of it, at the Hollywood geriatric age of 44. But she was great. Like, I loved that it was the same. It felt like the same kind of character going through the same kinds of things, just in a different realm.
They
both didn't really know how to get out of the life that they were doing. And in the end, it could have been a beautiful love story. But of course, it's Aronofsky, so fuck that.
Yeah. The emotion. We do have a clip.
I did watch the clip, and I'm keen to put it through, but I might cut it a bit shorter for a content warning, as it's very adult, and we don't need to see it again. But do you want to watch the clip? I can run the clip in.
I think a
pound of German potato salad.
You know what Swiss cheese
is? A little less.
Less.
So why does it say blue cheese right here? Why does it?
A little less.
A little more.
Hey, Stevie. Your break is done, okay?
little more.
A little less.
A little less. A little less.
At last.
What's with the line?
Let's pick things up, right? It's rush hour.
Come on, people. Let's pick it up. Where's Katie? Oh, you're here. You're at your job. That's great.
Have a nice day, lady.
Go. Go, go, go.
Anyone?
Yeah, thank you. I know you from somewhere else. You should look so damn familiar. You Teamsters?
What do you have it?
Can I get a half pound of Virginia ham, half pound of the Yardsburg? No. I know you from someplace. Play softball?
No.
And you're not one of Mikey Bosch's buddies, right?
Never heard the guy.
Randy the Ram?
No.
The wrestler from the 80s? Ram Jam?
No.
That's freaky. You look just like the dude, except older.
There. I didn't quite get it to where we were going.
But you know, like, we want to get it out before the blood.
No, that's okay. We're all adults here. It's an adults only show.
What I love about that scene is, yes, the violence of him cutting his thumb is, you know, horrible and a bit shocking and everything, but it's also what he knows how to do.
Yeah.
Like, I love that is him knowing how to get a pop or to get what he needs from his audience so that he can play an exit. Like, this is his big exit from that particular stage. And, like, you're looking at it going, this is a guy who is a performer doing his big performance. I was like, oh, yeah. Man.
I know. It's a great movie.
It's so fucking good.
Yeah. It's...
Yeah.
But it's not the scene where he finds the groove in the deli. That's the deli scene after the scene where he finds the groove in the deli.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's Aronofsky. Like, this, you know what you're going to get, right? Also, no spoilers. It came out in 2008. What the fuck do you want for it? It's almost 20 years old. Like, fuck's sake. Oh, yeah. It's like, ow. Ow. Fuck. That's not what the movie is about, isn't it? It's not about this. It's about the glory that he's always chasing.
Yeah.
Very human, very, very cheap. Like, I love, I can't say a poor story. I love a story that doesn't have a requirement of wealth in order to make the story important. And that's what I really loved about this one, which is like, no, this isn't someone who had every opportunity. And I mean, it kind of is, because he was a successful wrestler. And we do that in that bar scene where he runs into what you would call a groupie. And does something absolutely wonderful and terrible at the same time. Yes, it's cocaine. No, it's missing his daughter's the dinner date that he had planned with his daughter. I mean, like, these are all the things. It's like he's trying hard, but he fails. He tries hard, but he fails. And he knows he fails, and it just makes it worse and worse in a cumulative sort of sense to get to that final wrestling match where he's trying to get that one last spark of glory. And he's willing to sacrifice every good thing in his life. And that is, you know, I don't know, this is something you as an individual have to take away. Is it great, or are you angry with him?
Mm.
And I'm not sure which one I am. Like, am I proud of him, or am I just angry?
What about you, Pete? Jill, where do you stand on that?
Well, I mean, it's completely appropriate for the character, but it's frustrating that it's kind of the old trope that you know, everything's going great until the woman that you know he thinks he has a thing with says no to him, and then, you know, he can't handle that one particular thing, so he pulls the entire house down around himself. Like, it's very much still like it's got that like kind of dirty.
Don't know.
It's the dirty internet.
Of,
there we go.
Of it's he's worth it.
Yeah, sorry
we
had a time
lost
out
you a little bit in there.
Yeah, your internet had one of those moments.
I don't know how much you lost. Should I?
We got as far as it's one of those dirty.
Oh, it's just one of those weird things. The same reason I had an issue with the last season of Ted Lasso, where it's like, you know, he can be redeemed if he has the love and respect of a woman. And if he doesn't perceive that he has that, well then, screw it all. Yeah. You know, it's just that little kind of like, oh, it kind of makes it like feel like it's her fault. Yeah. Even not directly, because it obviously is his fault, but there's like a little bit of a flavor of, you know, well, if she hadn't rejected him, then everything would have been fine.
If she,
I see that too, but
faster.
I also think that it's just a reflection on his insecurities and his, you know, what am I trying to say? Like his ego. So,
Yeah.
Just like how fragile he is actually.
Yeah.
Not anything.
And I feel like it is a deliberate rejection on that particular kind of a deliberate reflection on that particular kind of fragility. But it still had an icky feeling.
Yeah.
I know. I really love that. Like, you know, cause pretty much halfway through the film, he has a heart attack, has to have a coronary bypass. And his fragility, then suddenly the thing that he always relied on, his physical strength, that was his backup. That was always his solid base. When that went away, only then did his healing journey really kick into gear, because he was kind of just aching along, getting through stuff. Everything's fine. But when his, you know, his masculinity, his ego was removed out of the equation, he had to start looking in other places. And when his health started coming back, he started to lapse back into his old problematic habits, to the detriment of all the stuff he built when he had a heart attack. Yeah, interesting. Really good film. Really complex.
Yeah, yeah. We're not going to be doing ratings for anything like this. It's a long time ago.
Good point. I mean, good point.
We're not going to be talking about how many tits have been blown off by.
I will say I was surprised. You know, given some of our themed journeys in the past, generally that have been led by Dion, to have been pulled into WrestleToba and presented with art. Didn't think that's the way it was going to go.
You go.
Which one's better, the wrestler or Megaforce?
Jesus.
When you said we're doing the wrestler, I was like, oh yeah. Yeah, right. Okay. Because, I mean, I remembered how good a film it was. I just couldn't remember, like, how emotionally fucking ass-kicky it was. Yeah.
Well, it's not the only art film that we'll be seeing this month, because
not the only depressing film we're going to be seeing.
That is also true. Next week we are watching The Iron Claw, and I think it's another kind of arty one. But yes, also depressing.
Hey.
Is there something inherently depressing about wrestlers?
No, I think it's just good fodder.
It's good. Yeah, it's interesting stories. Next week's on The Iron Claw. Then what's after that is Fighting with My Family. Which should be an interesting little, more of an independent film from the UK.
Two films in a row that are based on true stories.
Yep. And then Nacho Libre to round off the month.
Because we need a little bit of Lucha Libre in there too. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. I love Lucha Libre as a wrestling style. I think it's the most fucking amazing adaptation of going, yes, we're doing this wrestling, but we're going to make it our own.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I dig that. I dig that a lot. Look, we've got a lot coming up. There's a lot of very interesting stuff. And Jill, you're going to be absolutely neck deep in all things wrestling for the next few days.
I know, I'm so excited. I'm flying tomorrow morning. I have to get up very early.
Hence also next week, it's a Wednesday.
Yes, I'm flying back on Tuesday. Sorry, guys.
So for this month in October, it's Depression Wednesdays. it's The Wrestler and The Iron Claw. And then we're back to Tuesday, wholesome family fun for the last couple of ones there. But also, what else is going on this week? Oh, is there anything else going on? Not much else. Pretty quiet weekend.
Oh, I don't know. It's a little thing called PAX in Melbourne.
PAX.
Very excited about that.
I know. The PAX. One, never the heard one of it. Year PAX. That I haven't been to PAX.
Yeah.
I know, skipping PAX to go to wrestling.
I mean, I can understand your decision-making there.
Yeah.
I'm going down to PAX. I'm going to be there just as a general fucking punter. I'll be wandering around looking at panels.
You'll enjoy that.
I will. I'm definitely going to go check out the Deerstalker One for All panel and stuff like that. The reason that we're doing this tonight is because I had a Deerstalker shoot last night. So,
Which isn't a hunting reference. It's something.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. What can I tell you? I love putting on a bit of fucking silly makeup and wearing some funny plastic ears.
Sure. And what did you do with the shoot?
Nothing to do with that.
Yeah, it should be fun. I'm looking forward to the rest of WrestleTober to get more of my, as I said, like it's hard to sort of say, oh, look, a sport film. Okay. Yeah. I'll give it a go. Maybe I'll learn something. Can I recommend one that I put it that came up in the chat a little bit earlier that I did see, and it is on Netflix, so you can go and see it immediately if you want. The Remarkable Life of Ibelin.
Oh yes,
which is a really cool documentary.
Okay,
I won't even tell you what it's about. Just go watch it. It's called The Remarkable Life of Ibelin. Yes. Very sweet, very wholesome. Maybe an emotional roller coaster.
Ooh.
So just fair warning. Yeah, we'll see what's going on. Anything else? You seen anything else that's fun? Peter, you had a long transit recently. Did you see anything that was
Did you watch anything good as you were flying?
I watched The Life of Chuck on the plane.
Oh, I want to see that.
And felt like we've kind of slept on that a bit. We probably should have talked about it when it came out.
I didn't even know when it came out, to be honest.
Last year, apparently. Anyway,
what the fuck? It got no fanfare here.
Let's watch it and talk about it because there are things. It's an interesting... Okay. It's a bit of a me film, but it's an interesting film.
Put it on the list for
November. Sure. Life of Chuck. You heard it here first.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, the other thing we got was an invite to go and watch Tron Ares tonight that we can't do because we are currently here with you right now. And
also, do we want to watch that?
And there's the other point.
I mean,
do we really, really want to watch the Leto?
The Jared Leto Tron.
Yeah. And I have been watching, and I know that we've got to wrap it up. I've been watching the new thing of Monster on Netflix. So Ryan Murphy, I think it is, does the series called Monster. And it's like the story of the twins who killed their parents or... serial killers. And this most recent one is Monster about Ed Gein, the ghoul, as it were. Not good. Really not very good at all.
Excellent. I'm going to watch that right now.
Yeah. Like, it's interesting where they've tried to go, okay, we're going to pull in all of the films that his stuff inspired. So Psycho is based on him. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is based on him. Elements of the Silence of the Lambs are based on him. So he's this really prolific kind of idea, but then they've tried to use that and then turn it into a series where they then, for whatever reason, decided, yeah, fuck reality and fuck the facts of the case.
That's very Ryan Murphy, though.
Yeah.
He does take liberties. He does embellish quite a bit.
Didn't he make Nip Tuck?
Did he?
I don't know about that one.
Maybe I'm thinking of someone else. Sorry.
But yeah, it's...
I'm getting dottery in my old age. Leave me alone.
Okay, Grandpa. We live around the other side. Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, everybody. We hope that you had a nice time jumping off the top rope with us, slamming into the canvas.
Yes, it was Ryan Murphy who did Nip Tuck.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Sorry, your knowledge is better than ours.
My brain pan is work. I done mem good. Why many word when few word do fine? Anyway, sorry about that. Yes, it's been good. The Wrestler, go check it out again. If you haven't seen it, go to it. It's great. It's a great piece.
Good luck finding it. It's not on it, available on any of the streaming services. You have to pay for it no matter where you go.
Yeah, it's you like can rent $3 to rent it, though.
Yeah. Rent it on Amazon or...
Or own a copy in the $3 bin at a service station.
There you go. If you have a DVD player.
Hey, never let physical media die. We'll make sure it works. Oh, thanks, everyone. What a fun time talking about The Wrestler.
Yes.
You get to do it 3 more times.
And Nikki Rick. No, that's all right. We've got different people next time. Who's the star of the next one?
Oh, Zac Efron.
Again? Weird. What? Where did he come from?
Oh, and he was in Baywatch. Jeremy Allen White.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, Chef. Oh dear. All right. Well, that's been wonderful. I'll see you all later.
Have fun if you go on a pack.
Oh yeah, have fun if you go on a pack.
Have fun if you go on wrestling.
Have fun
if you
go on
wrestling.
See you
in Perth.
See you next Wednesday.
Yeah, next Wednesday.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night. Thanks for listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast. If you have questions, please email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. Find us on our website, www.theperiodictableofawesome.com, where there's links to our iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. Until next time, stay awesome.